everyone knows there's some sort of fudgery going on, but they don't know what it is. Whatever happened to the checks and balances for the public to actually understand what is happening at our government? Why is a psycho on X exposing all this?
I continued in that vein until the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania. And that opened my eyes when I saw that man stand up in the face of, you know, a hail of bullets. I thought, oh my God, this is not the Trump this is not the person that I was told he was. That changed my worldview.
There's people pulling at strings, but they don't know who they are and what the strings are and where the strings point to.
Elon Musk can actually get to the heart of where is the root of that misalignment in incentives and go directly to that bottleneck and absolutely decimate it and realign the incentives of the government with the will of the people.
What we're seeing now is Elon is executing policy that is unconventional, that is quite revolutionary. I mean, Trump is trying to orchestrate a revolution in returning back to the Constitution of, you know, 237 years ago.
If you're part of the machine and you're nice to the machine will be nice to you. And if you're mean to the machine will try to crush you. The combination of Trump and Doge and Elon for this election cycle for the last 3-4 weeks has set the world aflame, it seems like. At least for the ones that are paying attention to politics, they're paying attention to domestic affairs, people that are sort of in the periphery being like, wow, why is Elon 24/7 saying everything's corrupt, right? One of the things that I've noticed is that there's been a gigantic amount of increase in attention to this thing that has developed. Now, again, I haven't been around that long. I've only really started paying attention to politics truly until for the last 5 years, and vastly ramping up in the last couple, especially as my plans around growing a family, and especially with my wife being pregnant and having a son, that completely has changed my worldview. And I feel a lot more responsible. Like, I feel like I need to engage more. But the thing that's really interesting is this Doge movement. It seems to have captured everyone's attention for all different reasons. I was telling Hans and David before we wrapped up our meeting, was all the sides. So I'm going out of my way to watch a lot of content, a lot of videos from people that just despise the approach that Doge is taking, despise the people that are heading it, right? And the juxtaposition between the two sides right now reminds me a lot of what happened in 2016 with Trump, where there was this giant machine that was pointed against Trump, but I didn't see the other side. I didn't know the other side existed. I thought Trump bad, evil, hates everybody, hates brown people, hates immigrants. He's a Nazi, he's a dictator, right?
Absolutely.
I wasn't aware of the opposite side. Now with 2025 now, it's like now I'm almost on the other side. I like to think I'm more neutral, but we all have our biases, right? Obviously. But I'm trying to view both, right? And it's like now I'm seeing these like two gigantic apparatuses. One of them is like worst thing ever, and the other one is like best thing ever. And they're all just clashing. I don't know if anyone has watched Dragon Ball Z in the audience, but you know, they do the Kamehamehas and they like come together in this giant explosion. Anyway. This is what I grew up with.
That's as good analysis as I've ever heard. I mean,
like and subscribe.
I have to say, I was an ever Trumper, but during the course of his administration, I became quite a fan of what he was doing, not of him, but of what he was doing. And so I kept on saying, look, he's a bad guy, but he's done pretty good.
That's shared with a lot of people. I've heard that a million times.
And I continued in that vein until the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania. And that opened my eyes when I saw that man stand up in the face of, you know, a hail of bullets. I thought, oh my God, this is not the Trump this is not the person that I was told he was. That changed my worldview.
Wow, that singular moment.
Yeah. And then I started doing the investigation, and then I found myself exactly where Elon is now. Man, this guy has made some really, really good decisions.
This guy.
So what, here's the most interesting about that guy, right? So if y'all follow this channel closely, you know that Larry is that guy. And what that really means is back in the day, a few months ago, Larry made a post around, correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, but your hesitations around Elon getting too political, getting involved in a dirty fight, right?
And I didn't make a post, Prasad. I made the statement on your channel.
Oh, that's right. You made a statement on my channel.
On a podcast just like this.
On a podcast just like this that got clipped. And Elon saw it and he said, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is about survival, right? The survival.
He said, that guy doesn't understand. And he went on to tell me what I didn't understand. There you go.
And so from that point forward, Larry is that guy. But now that guy, a couple days ago, actually was once again boosted, replied to, whatever you want to call it, on a completely opposite to post, right? So help us understand. Okay, so yeah, walk us through what you've gone through, how you're viewing the story. Obviously, for the audience out there, if you're watching this, just do keep in mind that this panel is we are in favor of Elon having for a long time. So keep that bias in mind as we go through this discussion. But I really want to, I want us to explore this as objectively as possible, which I know this is something that Larry's excellent at doing. So go ahead.
How does that guy go from not getting it to this guy gets it?
Yeah. How does it go from that guy to this guy?
Yeah. I knew I was in trouble when Jason Calacanis posted, are you that guy? You know, look, I'm a longtime Elon fan and have been for, you know, since 2008 when I became aware of Elon. And the truth is that, you know, I'm 70 plus, I'm 78 years old. So for me, I've got built in the biases of my age and of my experience in business. And so I'm very, very conservative I'm very conservative in general terms, in financial terms. But I'm particularly conservative when it comes to management's role in the company and in politics. So for me, Elon's growing activity in politics was, you know, was uncomfortable. And so when we chatted about Elon's role on your channel, and I think it was my first appearance on your channel,
I think
you were pressing me about, you know, how I felt about it. And I didn't feel great about it. I really felt that I wasn't concerned about the share price because, frankly, I don't care about the share price of Tesla shares. I've got a very long-term view, despite my age. I mean, my Tesla shares and my investment in Tesla are for my children and grandchildren. And I have a long view of Tesla's role and opportunity in our economy. So, you know, it's a 5, 10, 15 year view, but I just felt that, you know, Elon didn't have enough upside potential for getting involved politically or making political statements, versus the downside potential. But I have to say, you know, that seeing how effective he is and seeing that he has adopted this role and he has been adopted by Trump in this role and seeing how he is executing this role and understanding the importance of the role, I've completely changed my tune. I see now just what he saw in his vision, and his vision was much broader, much wider, and much deeper than I gave him credit for. So, you know, to say that I underestimated Elon is quite startling because I'm a great fan, but I definitely underestimated him. I underestimated his ability to get engaged and his ability to execute. And, you know, he just keeps amazing me.
So, Larry, do you think, I mean, there's that portion of it that is underestimating Elon, but the other thing that I'm struck by is the fact that this conservatism in wanting to get involved in politics has been the status quo among management for so long,
yes,
that his willingness to buck the trend shows that there's so much pent up will of the people,
yeah,
that was like there's just this untapped desire by the public to finally see someone do what right now, because frankly, CEOs and people of power who did not have position in Washington have neglected their duty to serve the country in this way.
Well, you know, can I add a couple of words there too? Is like, and I don't even know if that's accurate. They have, but nobody has seen it. They're not transparent about it. They're doing it behind the scenes. And I think that's what's created a lot of the lack of trust and this pent up energy, is that everyone knows there's some sort of fuckery going on, but they don't know what it is. And they know there's people pulling at strings, but they don't know who they are and what the strings are and where the strings point to. Right. I just wanted to add that layer on there, because I think that's something that I personally felt, and something that I've heard expressed by many different people. Sorry, Larry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I do want to say that it is not entirely correct to say that business people haven't got involved. You know, McNamara famously came from Ford into McNamara into Kennedy's cabinet. And we've had, you know, some really senior business people join cabinets in the past. And that's joining the cabinets in a conventional sense and operating in the very conventional sense under the president. So it's not clear that business people haven't got involved, but they've got involved in an extremely professional and polished way. I mean, what we're seeing now is Elon is executing policy that is unconventional, that is quite revolutionary. I mean, Trump is trying to orchestrate a revolution in returning back to the Constitution of, you know, 237 years ago. He's returning back to what was intended by our founding fathers and by our early presidents in terms of the executive being the executive. Over the years, Congress first, and then the bureaucrats that Congress created and the structure of bureaucracy that they created using their power of the purse to sustain and implement policy over time and hedge against the president's power. So they've created agencies that are, quote, independent of the presidential power. Doesn't exist in the Constitution. The bureaucratic structure that Congress created and the protections against the executive that the Congress created using its power of the purse, none of that's in the Constitution. And it has become a self-fulfilling sort of growth organism. It's growing just like a mushroom, and it just, you know, keeps popping up, and we create independent agency after independent agency after, and we keep allocating more and more money to it, and we protect the allocation of money by this crazy idea that the president has to spend every penny that Congress allocates. And so we've created over time a non-resilient and a ever-growing and permanent structure where laws keep, you know, piling up, and the president has little control over his own executive authority. Now, I mean, I'm getting a little bit, you know, in the weeds here.
No,
this
is perfect.
A little theoretical.
No, it's perfect.
But that's the problem. And so the president has engaged Elon and used him in a fashion that nobody has ever done before, And he's exposed him and really put him up front in terms of the struggle. And so this is not normal in terms of what a businessman does, what a business person has done previously in any executive, but it's also not a conventional administration. So for all these reasons, it's really different.
So let me play devil's advocate there, because one of the biggest points of criticism that I've heard is that precise mechanism is what is so corrupt about this whole thing, because this is giving Elon way too much power. How do you think about that?
He has zero power. Elon has zero power. All he has is the ability to analyze and provide information to the bureaucrats, to the agency heads, to the department heads. So he can expose a problem, take it to the head of whichever department he exposes the problem in, and it's up to that person, it's up to that cabinet officer to take the action. So for example, USAID had no appointed cabinet member in charge of it. It was a, quote, independent agency. So it's one of these agencies that exist in the minds of people. It's not provided for in the Constitution. In fact, even departments like that have, you know, cabinet members in charge of them, that's not mentioned in the Constitution either. But the cabinets had been established very early in our history and have become accepted. But now we have independent and their responsibilities directly to the president. But we've created this whole shell of these independent agencies that are somehow not responsible directly to the president, but
they're not responsible to anybody.
They're funded by Congress and therefore are really creatures of Congress. So what Trump did was move a USAID under the Secretary of State, and therefore which is the proper place for it. By the way, I will tell you, I have a backstory about USAID. I know a lot about USAID, but having moved it into that cabinet, now all Elon is doing is reporting to that cabinet secretary, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and said, this is expenditure which we can't trace the authority for, or this is expenditure that we can't trace the money for, or this is expenditure that doesn't seem to meet the, all the problems of that expenditure, and we can't trace what it's been used for, and so on and so forth. And then it's up to that cabinet head, in this case, the Secretary of State, to take action. So he has virtually zero power.
Except the power of the bully pulpit and his platform on X to bring a giant magnifying spotlight onto that thing.
But that's not political power. That's not executive power.
Do you think that's too much power?
No, I don't think it's enough power.
Walk me through that.
I mean, it would have been better to give him the power of canceling deals, of actually going in and closing down agencies. The president could have given that power because the president has that power. In the Constitution, the president could literally say, Elon, you have fiat power, you can close down agencies. And he could have said, you can close down agencies subject to my signature, or something like that. He didn't give him that power, but he could have.
Why do you trust Elon so much to execute this against, like in a good faith manner, aligned with the will of the people?
I'll tell you why. Because in all the years that I've invested in Elon, and in all the companies that Elon runs and that I've invested in, I'm invested in all his companies except for the boring company. It's too boring for me.
Hey.
The one thing, the one constant through all the years and all the companies and all the operations and all the ups and all the downs is that he has controlled cost with an absolute iron fist. Is remarkable at his consistency in ensuring that only the absolute necessary expenses are incurred. And that there are many parts, there are many aspects of his genius, but that's the one aspect of his genius we so vitally need in this country. I mean, the numbers are staggering. The expenses are staggering, and the waste is just, it is, you know, at epic levels. I don't want to, you know, carry on too much in that vein, but the reason I trust him is because I have seen him achieve miracles in terms of controlling costs, but getting productivity from those controlled costs. And so I don't think there's a person in the country, I don't think there's a person on earth who has the skill sets that he has in that regard. I know people think that he's a great visionary. I know that he's a great thinker. I know that he's a great inventor. I know that he's, all of those other things are great. But the skill set that he brings in that regard is peerless.
Can I say what you just said in a slightly different way, Larry? You know, I think one of the, that is an example of Elon's just peerless ability to align incentive systems within a large group of people to do something that's important. And so that is, you can think about it in the context of controlling costs, which is extremely important, you know, getting maximum efficiency for the least amount of cost possible. But you do that through aligning the incentives of the overall group of people towards the goal that you want. And that is the thing that I think why so many people do support Elon in what he's doing right now with Doge, is that we can all tell that the United States federal government, is their incentives are not aligned with the majority of Americans, even close. And we believe, at least I believe, that Elon Musk can actually get to the heart of where is the root of that misalignment in incentives and go directly to that bottleneck and absolutely decimate it and realign the incentives of the government with the will of the people.
Yeah. Go ahead, Larry.
I think it's more complicated than that. I think it's too complicated. I think that complicates it too much because it's easy, it's not easy, but it is easier for Elon to create alignment in, say, SpaceX. Even in SpaceX, it's a huge job. He, every so often, he has to do an enormous amount of work to realign people and get them focused on the thing that he wants them focused on, because it's so difficult for people to make that transition. When you deal with an organism as large as the U.S. government, there are so many differing objectives, and there are so many players. There's Congress, and the Congress consists of at least two large parties within which there are many conflicting objectives. There's the president, there's the Supreme Court, and all of those things boil up to the issue of what is the objective and so on and so forth. So to set alignment or to set objectives, it takes the president, and the president has to be very strong. So with a president like Biden, we tend to get too many people setting the direction. With Trump, it's different. He sets the direction in very clear terms, and it's not really in Elon's place to set that direction. And so that's the huge difference between what he's doing now and what he does in his own companies. So he's doing less of the top of setting the goal and doing a lot more of the block and tackling of reducing the cost. So what you say is truly part of his genius, but it's not that piece that's being engaged at this point. So he doesn't go into USAID and say, this is the goal for USAID. That's Marco Rubio's goal, and Marco Rubio's aligning with Trump. So it's a lot more complex in this case, Hans. It is like, it's like he is playing a subservient role to his boss, and he's doing it, you know, in his own inimitable style, but he's definitely playing the subservient role to Trump.
I think the two things that are interesting there is that I think many feel that it's a greater role than that because he has such an incredible grasp of social media, and he has an incredible grasp of his ability to come across to the public because he's done it for so long. The guy is very used to leading a topic of conversation, whatever. Like, he's just used to being in the front and saying, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Right. And I think that in the minds of people that are listening to him, they automatically view him through that lens. Right. And
yeah, but let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
If you look at all his tweets in the last couple of weeks, well, since he's taken on the role.
Yeah.
Have you heard him talk about the objective of a particular agency or a particular of the U.S. government? He's only talked about one thing and one thing only: expenses.
Yeah.
You know, expenditures. So that kind of reinforces my point that his drive right now is nothing but the cost side of the balance sheet. It's not the goals and it's not the objectives and it's the cost side of the balance sheet. If you heard him in the White House in the Oval Office standing next to Trump, you could see he was really, really, you know, keeping to his lane, and his lane was cost,
yeah.
And his lane was where's the money going, and his lane was how are we going to meet these, how are we going to get the budget into control.
Yeah.
So it wasn't anything on policy and it wasn't anything on objectives. It was cost.
Yeah. So the most interesting thing there is that I think anybody who would be convinced or believe that he was acting in good faith, I think 100% of the people would be like, perfect. Yes. I no better person to do that. I think a lot of the like the hoopla and the hysterics come from the people that don't believe he's doing this in good faith. And that is the thing that is like, that's the thing that's very interesting to watch play out, because a lot of the resistance I'm seeing, like a lot of the, let's say, legitimate resistance that I'm seeing from people is that I don't have, like, how do we know that this guy's going to do the right thing?
Yeah.
How do we know that this guy that is the richest person in the world, And he's given basically the keys to the expenses for the entire government, which there's nothing in the law that says that they can't do. I mean, if you just like, I've tried to watch content on this stuff and I'm trying to like educate myself on this. It seems completely legal because they're basically revamping the exact agency that Obama spooled up in 2014 to try and fix the disastrous launch of Obamacare, Medicare.gov or whatever it was, whatever that website is,
like, well,
my health insurance. Yeah. Healthcare.gov. Yeah. Shout out healthcare.gov. And so they just repurposed that thing that Obama spooled up to try and fix the reason why healthcare.gov was such a disaster, which was modernizing the systems of the government. So that you won't have in healthcare.gov. And then Trump's like, okay, we're actually going to modernize it. And we're going to start by exposing all the costs that are associated to everything in the government so we can go after it, right? It's legal from that perspective. I'm not a lawyer, but curious to see what happens there. So it almost seems like this is what they're going to get done. Like what is stopping them from getting this done? Like, they're on this freight train. And trying to watch the other side try to stop this by throwing as much as they can to the wall is a very interesting thing, because it all stems from lack of trust. And it all stems from Trump is impossible to trust, as if the alternative is any better. This is like, if that's really where you're coming from, It's like, what about the other side? What about all the stuff that's being exposed? These hundreds of billions of dollars are going to crazy, you know, anyway, I don't want to go down that path too much.
No, so, but you're right. You're right on target. The reality is that all the political opposition and all the shouting and all the noise is not focused on what is happening. It's focused on what they're scared of what is happening. But they're not focused on what is happening. And as long as Trump keeps it legal, as long as he obeys the courts, as long as he goes through the machinations of the court, and as long as Elon keeps exposing these expenditures, so much the better. Now, I will say that, you know, it's really difficult to walk a fine line when you run such a huge number of huge companies, and you're looking at, you know, a defense expenditure. You know, they spend a lot of money with his company. So it's tough for him. But, you know, I have to say, so far, it's been great. But look, the urgency of the problem is so great, and the problem is so serious for the country, that I wouldn't want to be a Democrat, and I wouldn't want to be railing against Elon for this issue. I would want to focus on this issue and try and solve the problem.
Yeah, I would hitch my wagon to it and be like, how can we do this for everything? Like I will. How about this? I'll help you find the Republican garbage, and the Republicans will help find the Democrat garbage. And then let's just make a handshake deal. We get rid of 80% of the line items, and we have to sort of from biggest to smallest. That's the deal. Let's just make a handshake deal and go forward. That's not going to happen. Or maybe it's happening behind the scenes, and everything we're seeing is posturing. But I doubt it.
It's not going to happen, unfortunately.
And that's a terrible strategy for them, honestly, if they don't do that. It really is a terrible strategy. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I think this is going to be a moment of like a decade of the Democratic Party repositioning itself and reasserting itself. I don't know how it gets out of the... I don't know how it gets out of the box that it's put itself in. Anyway, I don't want to talk about politics. I really want to just say that the deficit is so serious now, and the path we're on is so destructive to our lifestyle, to our country, to our security, to our future, that this just has to be done, and we just have to do whatever we need to do to make it happen. And I think that's where Trump's mind is.
Yeah. Hans, go for it.
I would just add to that, you know, I think that some of the former Democrats who would really align with this desire to go after areas of corruption in the government or areas where we're wasting money or doing things that hurt the country and hurt the future have already, as I said, former Democrats, they've already left the party. And they have now joined the coalition with Trump. So your RFK Juniors, your Tulsi Gabbards, that these type of people who saw these same types of problems within their own domains and decided that they had to do something about it, they are doing it. They're just not doing it with inside the party because the party disallowed them from addressing these issues.
But what becomes really important is to see elements of the Democratic Party start working with the Republicans to rebuild a more sustainable government structure. And I haven't seen that. I haven't even seen the Republicans rethink the whole structure of how money is allocated and how money is spent and how many laws they create and how to retire the laws that they have created. These are the, so, you know, you talked about first principles, Hans. These are the first principles of the problem. The first principle of the problem is that laws are created that sustain forever. And so we build this gigantic, you know, infrastructure of laws. Secondly, money that Congress allocates, which is gone through a very, very terrible process, has reached a terrible situation, And it just seems that the freight train can't be stopped. So those were the first principles of the problem. Now, I haven't seen anybody tackle them yet. And to me, that's going to be the root problem that has to be tackled when all of this is over.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing is a snowball of strangulation at the national level. We have to deal with it.
So, you know what's another first principles problem, too, that's adjacent to that? Our media has been absolutely awful at covering this bullshit.
Yes.
That's that. Okay, so how, whatever happened to the checks and balances for the public to actually understand what is happening at our government? Why is a psycho on X exposing all this? Why hasn't the mainstream media done this for the last 10 years? Could it be because part of their funding comes from that same government? Could that be?
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
You know?
I mean, you know, we've got this corruption that has become circular now. And we, you know, it the amount of money that flows from the government into the media, and then, you know, the media supports those people supporting them. And how do you break that cycle? And the cycle has been broken by this new media, by the Farzad channel. You know, you're doing it all by yourself, Farzad. I mean,
what's up?
Nobody, well, you and another 1,000 or 10,000 other influencers, but these are the important people right now, because instead of this circular bull that they keep talking, and instead of, you know, governing by slogan, you know, and legislating by slogan, you know, and which led to this whole work movement ultimately. I mean, that wasn't the ultimate reason, but I mean, that's been going on for some time. But allowing the slogan, government by slogan, to perpetuate itself, that's
where
the problem.
Where the slogans are literally the exact opposite of what they're doing, just by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like a lot of, I sniffed this out when I was following the Yang presidency. I was completely oblivious to it back when he was running in, for the 2020 election back in 2019, I think it was during his thing, where he made this commentary. He's like, because he was an outsider coming in. He's like, you know, in front of a camera, you have the reporters and the politicians trying to be, you know, like trying to put on a show. But behind the scenes, they're going to cocktail parties together. They're having dinner together. They're flying together. They're chumming up to each other. Okay. On what planet are you going to be able to hold the government accountable and ensure that they're actually aligned with the will of the people when the apparatus that's supposed to bring forth the information for the public to make that decision is literally in the pockets of that same exact thing, right? And so by definition, the only way to disrupt that is by bringing an outsider force in. You have to bring forces outside of that establishment to come and just bulldoze. Like, this can't be like, and this is what I've been trying to think through, because, you know, one of the biggest points of criticism that I've heard is like the way Doge is approaching this is not correct, because they're bull in a china shop. This is bad. Like, you know, you're making too many mistakes. You're going too fast. You're disrespecting a lot of federal employees when you do this. This is just not acceptable. I'm like, okay, help me understand how there's any other solution than that when all the interests are so unbelievably entrenched with each other. How else do you do that?
Yeah, and Mr. Lyon, I mean, you only have to look at California to see what the ultimate outcome of this is.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody in their right mind would rate California, California's government as a good government. I mean, I don't know anybody, even left-wing Democrats have begun to acknowledge what the problem is in California. And there, you know, you've got an extreme left-wing government, a government that would never be, I mean, you have a government that's so extreme left-wing that the people voting for them don't even, in California, don't even understand how left-wing the government is. I mean, the mayor of Los Angeles, you know, she was, I mean, if you look at her history, you just can't believe what you're reading. I mean, this woman was an outright blatant communist. Why would you put that person in charge of a city like Los Angeles? Why? The only reason is that she's put up by the machine, and once she's put up by the machine, then everybody, you know, votes for her accordingly. And, you know, we don't want to become California. We don't want to become so mismanaged. But if you look at what FEMA has done in the last, the last crises, you have to say, we've already become California in some of these departments.
Yeah, yeah. The machine will promote one of their own. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If you're part of the machine and you're nice to the machine will be nice to you. And if you're mean to the machine will try to crush you. Now the problem is that you have enough outsiders that are not just as big as the machine, but they know how to play the game better than the machine. And they understand how to actually attack the problem so that they're able to get in there and gain power and actually try...
I was just going to say, but if you did not have an iconoclast like Trump,
I don't think it
would happened. This have happened?
No, I don't think so.
And that's why it hasn't happened in California.
Yeah.
We haven't seen somebody of this caliber in terms of political skill. I mean, I still have a lot of reservations about Donald Trump. I have to tell you. He's not perfect, but... Man, have I learned to admire him. I mean, as you know, he's become so presidential. Isn't it amazing? He definitely was not presidential in his first term.
Yeah.
But he's become so presidential, almost a vuncular presence. I mean, I was watching him yesterday while, you know, Elon was trying to answer questions and grappling with X. And, you know, it was a situation I was thinking, you know, the old Trump would have thrown him out.
Yeah. Can I tell you a very interesting comment that I heard yesterday? My mom, who was the most ardent hater of Trump of all time. I mean, Larry, I'm telling you right now, there's not a person on this planet that probably hated Trump more than my mom did. You know what she said yesterday? Because she was, you know, she watches the content on the channel. She's a huge fan. She's my number one fan. She likes and subscribes just like everybody else watching this, right? Look at this, I'm a professional YouTuber. And she, you know, she watches some of the stuff that I put on there. You know, we did an edit of the Elon thing with Trump. And she's like, just out of the blue, man, Trump has changed. I'm like, whoa, what? Excuse me? That's coming from you? I was like, whoa, that took me by surprise. Also, some of the commentary around Biden before, anyway, she what a libertarian. Anyway, we'll set that aside. So, she has been definitely in the camp of this is a completely and total untrustworthy individual because he's completely evil. He's completely evil. And now I wonder, like, as I think about this Doge stuff that's coming through, I wonder how quickly a lot of that's going to unwind as Doge executes. Because we have the remnants of the illogical criticism of Trump and Elon. There's a lot of illogical criticisms. There's a lot of logical criticisms. Like, hey, Elon has a lot of businesses. Should he really be looking at defense contracts? Should he really be looking at even media contracts? Because he has a social media company. Isn't that a conflict of interest? Like, there are legitimate things to talk about. I don't know what the right answer is, but let's talk about it, right? Let's talk about what are the things he definitely can or can't do and how the executive branch should approach it, right? But there is also a vast amount of criticism is illogical. It just comes from a standpoint of, I think this person's evil and they're doing it to better themselves, which I believe is a projection of how the old powers, the establishment executed. And so they automatically attach that sort of execution to this brand new thing that's coming through. But I think that stuff unwinds as Doge starts to be like, okay, we've identified $250 billion of expenses. We don't have to get Congress approval because this is all under the purview of the executive branch. For these other $250 or $500 billion, we have to go through Congress, but we'll work with them. And then let's say they get somehow through a miracle, they get Congress to approve whatever they need to approve. And then the budget comes through and holy shit, our deficit's down from from 2 trillion to 1 trillion or whatever that number is. And then Trump is able to put in a tax cut. And by the time he leaves office, the budget could be balanced because you have a mixture of like your deficit's cut in half, and then you have growth through the economy because of the tax cuts, and you're able to balance the budget.
And your interest rate comes down so that your debt service comes way down, which is a huge, component of the struggle that we're in right now, too. And then that one hits consumers directly because as soon as the interest rates come down, then their car payments come down and their house payments come down if they're on a variable. And a lot of their, a lot of their bills come down if the interest rates come down.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get to is there is a clear path for the general public that is hesitant about this actually working, for them to actually see it play out in real time in the next couple of years. And I think that's going to have a dramatic shift to how people view government and how people view Trump and how people view Elon. I think it's going to be a very dramatic shift. I could be wrong.
Well, right now, Trump is at the height of his popularity out of any time that he's been in office.
53%.
And the question is whether that continues, because everything you've said is very difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
To get laws through Congress, to get the expenses actually reduced, to get the allocations by Congress to actually reduce, because everybody's got a favorite program in every single department, in every single, and so they start horse trading. Well, I'm not prepared to cut mine unless you're prepared to cut yours. Well, if you get that, then I must get that. And there are so many interlocking things in every department that it's very difficult to bring anything down. It's much easier to pump everything up. So everything you're saying could come to pass, but it's very difficult to come to pass. And at the end of the day, if Elon manages to cut these things by exposing them, it's only the exposure of them that really counts, not so much the cut of them.
Yeah.
Because right now, the way law stands is that when Congress allocates money, the president's required to spend that money. I hope the Supreme Court reverses that.
This is impoundment, by the way, for those that are not familiar. Impoundment, right?
Yeah, impoundment is the problem. And so unless the Supreme Court reverses that, that's an almost unassailable, impediment to the what you've outlined as a course of action.
Have you done much thinking about the possible path to a Supreme Court case on impoundment, Larry? I mean, do you think it's likely that this is going to happen, and that what do you predict would be the outcome if it does?
It is certainly going to happen. There's not even doubt about it. It's like a 99.9% certainty, because Trump is not going to spend quite a lot of the allocated money. And so it's going to be very early in the cycle that Congress goes to the Supreme Court and says, hey, they haven't spent, well, they'll go to the local court, then it'll work its way up to the Supreme Court. So the first problem is that they can go to any local judge and they can analyze every
shop
single
around.
Judge and figure out the best judge to shop for this and go to that guy. And that's what they've done so far.
What an unbelievable system we live in.
Well, somebody tried to propound a law that, the judge's findings can only apply to the area in which they operate. So whether it's the local, whether it's an individual judge or it's an area, what do they call the judicial areas?
Jurisdiction.
And then whether it's a state or whether it's the appeal court, which is an area, several states, that can only apply in the states in which they or in their jurisdiction, but only the Supreme Court at a national level. Because if you read the Constitution, I read it last night for probably the fifth time in the last few months. There's nothing in the Constitution that talks about anything but a Supreme Court.
Wow.
All of the rest is the laws that have been created by Congress.
Wow.
So that whole branch of government is an invention of Congress, other than the Supreme Court.
Right.
So you mentioned that Congress would have to initiate this, you know, legal proceeding in a court. Who in Congress has the freedom to do that? Does that have to be Congress as a whole acting together? Or can that be a faction of, you know, the Democratic faction of Congress kind of acting independently?
Look, anybody can initiate an action, but I think that the sort of standard method is for the state attorney generals, each of the states that are interested in this problem. So classically, any Democrat administration in any state will get involved, and typically they'll join forces. So five or six or seven states will get together, and sometimes more. I think the last...
Congress itself. That's just...
Congress very seldom goes to the Supreme Court directly. It's generally, you know, a citizen or a group of citizens that actually initiate action.
And so their claim would be that Trump can't do this because Congress hasn't said, not that Congress is necessarily pursuing the Trump administration directly.
They go to the court on the basis of the law. And the law is the act that Congress passed that says, you know, that every bit of money that Congress spends must be spent. And the Supreme Court confirmed that in a Supreme Court ruling. And so that's the law of the land. And so the only way to change that is for the president to assert his authority and say, I am the spender of money. I'm the one who can take this action. I'm not spending this money. And then somebody must sue him and say, oh, but the law says this. And then that has to go through a judge. They'll find a judge to say to the president, you have to spend that money. He'll immediately appeal to a the appeal court. The appeal court,
they'll rule and then it'll get appealed either way.
Yeah, and then the Supreme Court will decide whether to certify it to go to the Supreme Court. Then it gets argued. There is a process for the president to go to the Supreme Court and say, look, this can't wait. This is a critical problem. We want you to see it. We want you to rule on it right away. And the Supreme Court has, from time to time, has often, when the president asks, done that. So, for example, that was the case where Trump, who wasn't even president at the time, said to the Supreme Court, hey, you've got to stop this. You know, you can't have me appearing in court while I'm trying to run for office, or they can't take me to court for something I did as a president. And so he was able to get the Supreme Court to hear him, you know, without having to go through the whole process. That's my understanding of it. And I'm no lawyer, so I'm probably wrong.
Go ahead, Hans.
So given the current makeup of the Supreme Court, what do you think the likely outcome of that appeal? I mean, it's hard to say, obviously, now because we don't have the specific cases and know what the actual, you know, minutiae of the claim will be. But do you expect them to uphold the president's right to impound funds this time?
Absolutely, I expect it. Absolutely, I expect it. I mean, I read the Constitution again. I mean, I think for the fifth time, I can't understand the argument. I should read the Supreme Court argument, and I'm no lawyer, but it doesn't compute for me.
Where I'm at is, like, I thought the whole idea between the three branches of government, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative, right, is to have a check and balances, right? Like, you want to make sure that one thing doesn't go crazy so the other two can help self-correct. To me, it sounds like if Congress says this is the money you have to spend it, that to me feels like there is no checks and balances. Because all that happens is if Congress gets corrupt enough, and oh, by the way, I wonder why they have 17% approval rating, they get corrupt enough where they're just throwing money everywhere, and then they're like, well, you have to spend it. Sorry, you have to spend it. Doesn't sound right. Okay, so we vote a president in that's not spending any of the Congress money, and then the country goes to shit. Vote a new president. Impeach the president. That's how I thought this is how the system was supposed to work. Checks and balances between the three branches. Am I wrong? Is this too much of a simplistic view?
It is not a simplistic view. The problem is in the implementation and the boundaries between the three different branches of government. Look, there are three branches of government created by the Constitution. There's Congress, who's the power to create laws. There's the president, who has to actually implement those laws. He has the power of veto. And then there's the Supreme Court that arbitrates between them. Most of the structures that we live with today have been generated over time and are extra constitutional. They're outside or they're beyond the four sides of the constitutional.
That's
document.
Why we don't pass any amendments anymore, because we figured out a way around it.
That is exactly right. We have found our way around it. And so if you look at the court system, all of the district courts, the appeal court, all of that's been created by Congress. Congress could pack the courts. It could add more judges to the courts. And the last Congress threatened to do that. Not the last Congress, actually Biden also threatened to do it. So, you know, and it was tried in the past as well. Franklin Delano Roosevelt famously tried to pack the court because the courts wouldn't allow him to do some of the things he wanted to do. Fortunately, he wasn't able to do that. And I don't think anybody will be able to do it. But this Supreme Court is a Trump court. It is conservative. It is overwhelmingly conservative. And in these 4 years, I suspect there will be at least one retirement of a right-leaning judge, and he'll be replaced by a right-leaning judge. As long as it happens before the midterms, or if the midterms go Trump's way.
Yeah, and I mean, it is accurate to say that they are more aligned with Trump, but it's also like they're a constitutional originalist court, which happens to be aligned with Trump.
Yeah,
I want to return back to the issue of Elon, because that's where we started.
We
kind of drifted.
We've
far
gone all apart. Over the place.
yeah. The real question is, can Elon, and this is the question I've been asked again and again, can Elon run his companies while he's functionally working at reducing the size of government, which is a massive job? And the answer to that question is that he seems to have built a team that is very capable. Yeah, everybody, you know, laughs at it and, you know, but I mean, what a brilliant group of kids. And it's exactly the way he's built his companies. So I have very high, as high a respect I have for his ability to control expenses, I have even higher respect for his ability to hire people, hire the right people, and inspire people. And so I think that's going to be okay. I think he will build a team, and that will be a resilient team. And as far as the companies are concerned, all I can say is that the Elon Musk that attended the last earnings call was on fire. And as long as he keeps, you know, as excited as he remains, as excited as he seems to be about his companies at the same time, I think that's all it takes.
I think my takeaway from his tone in the last few weeks is that you can tell he's working his life's mission. Like, he really feels like he's getting a lot of fulfillment from what he's doing. Like, set aside, is he doing it for the right reasons, wrong reasons, whatever. At a human level, like, we've seen it with individuals. You can tell when they're like, life is good. Like, yeah, it's hard, but man, it's good. Like, we're getting some shit done. And that's the vibe I get, is that he is extremely energized by the position that he's in. And like, and again, like, this is such a, I keep throwing around the word juxtaposition, but it really is, I think, a very fitting word Contrast that to his time under the Biden administration and how many different roadblocks, like outright public, just throw him in the trash. Mayor Led, right? We're all here because of Mayor Led. FYI, if you've been following the story, if Mayor Led never happened, where Biden got on the stage and said, Mary, you led, and it matters at the EV summit that Elon and Tesla were not invited to, who knows where we could have been, right? Who knows where we could have been?
That's
right. So
there was also the famous tweet by Lorena Gonzalez to
fuck Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elon.
Yeah.
Message received. Message we're here received. Because of that. But anyway, the reason why I want to bring that up real quick and then throw it to you, Larry, is you're seeing complete push out, at least public, but now it's very obvious that it was also behind the closed doors, because why wouldn't you deploy one of the best minds to fix stuff, right? And then you have the complete opposite end. Now it's like a complete embracing. It's wild to see. It really is very, very wild to see.
And what about the whole of Silicon Valley embracing Elon? I mean, it's like amazing, except for Sam Altman, of course.
And Vinod Khosla.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, Elon seems to be so happy right now. I mean, did you see just before we went on, you know, he was going to meet Modi, the prime minister of India, and he was taking all four kids, all four or five obviously the young kids.
Oh, really?
You know, he's just so happy. I mean,
that's cool.
I didn't think I've seen him quite as comfortable and relaxed. And you know, I don't know if you saw the interview by the Abu Dhabi head of Abu Dhabi Technology.
Yeah, the World Government Summit.
Yeah. He was so relaxed. You can tell when Elon is under stress, and he just doesn't look under stress right now. So right now things are good.
Yeah. Which is fascinating, because he hasn't had more on his plate, I don't think, ever.
Ever.
It doesn't seem like it. I think maybe he's hit a threshold of like, I'm out of fucks to give. It's the vibe I get. Yeah.
I get a different vibe, actually. So, you know, one of the ways that I look at Elon Musk and the way that he manages his companies is he always wants to go solve the bottleneck wherever it is, right?
Yeah.
So he's doing that when he spends his time at SpaceX. It's not, you know, what is the strategic objectives of the company for this year and how do we accomplish them? He's like, what's the biggest pain point that the company is facing this week? Let's go there and we'll sleep at the bottleneck. We'll do everything we can to fix it. And like, this is just his style of management and leadership.
Yeah, you're right on, but you missed one little piece that's very important. His ability to look at the company and identify the bottleneck that nobody sees.
Yeah.
So I'll see yes, that's an accurate statement. And then I'll raise you.
It's not
that nobody sees it. It's that he's able to give everyone in the organization enough of a voice to identify what the bottleneck is. And so he can source from the entire organization of every single one of his employees. Now he does have to pick among which ones he's listening to. It's the combination of his attachment to the low level employees that allows him to do that identification piece.
Yeah. I think that he does skip levels, many levels, and he does it with great grace and ease, but his ability to foresee the future and foresee the weaknesses and understand what he has to do. And sometimes he does it wrong. I mean, if you read, you know, Walter Isaacson's book, or if you read Reentry, which was a fantastic book, by the way, it's probably, in terms of understanding how he operates, it may be even better than the Isaacson book. But if you read Reentry, you'll see that he does see things that nobody else sees or identifies.
That is true.
And he does evolve his objectives, and he he will press where people don't expect. Anyway, I mean, either way,
yes,
it's great.
He has two algorithms. He knows how to find the thing, and he knows how to fix the thing. And they're both world-class, top-tier, A+. No one else can do it better.
Let me build on my point to where I was going with that, because that's exactly what I would agree with, all of that. And so when he cannot fix the bottleneck, I think that's when he feels the most stressed. And the reality of the situation is that the bottleneck is not always inside your company. Sometimes the bottleneck is out there in the environment. And I think that's where Elon Musk has, you know, why he got political in the first place, why he decided he had to do this, because he realized that over the last 4 years, he was bottlenecked, but it wasn't inside Tesla. It wasn't inside SpaceX. It wasn't inside Neuralink or any of his other companies, or even XAI, that it was the ecosystem of the United States, and that we were becoming much more like the EU, and that needed to be fixed. And so I think he feels, the reason that he doesn't feel stressed is because he can now go and solve the bottleneck that is one of the biggest bottlenecks that potentially endangers all of humanity. Because if the United States falls, the West falls, and if the West falls, are we able to become a spacefaring species? And is the probability that humanity has the light of consciousness be able to spread and grow essentially extinguished? And so, yeah, I think that's where it stems from.
I think that's a very good point, but we should also recognize that sometimes he's wrong. we read about some of the you know, huge disruptions he does to the companies, and then
oops.
Yeah. I mean, we see that, you know.
Well, that's the algorithm of finding the solution. Right? That's the whole, like, you know, go fast, break fast. It's like you don't know you've made an error until it hits you in the face, because you don't know what the solution is, but the solution comes from that error. I mean, I personally can talk about my experience at Tesla. That was like the best way to find the ultimate solution was to literally bulldoze your way towards it, you know, as fast as you can. It's just, it sucks and it hurts.
Yeah.
And good luck getting people to come with you. That's why it's such a unique thing.
That's the problem. Internally, people don't understand you, but externally, it looks terrible.
Exactly. And you know what the most fascinating thing about this conversation is, that we've come full circle.
Yeah.
We have come full circle. What was the narrative in 2012, 2013? Elon Musk, what a government leech with his stupid electric vehicles. He's just trying to steal our taxpayer money. How can you trust him? He hates humanity because he's trying to make everyone into robots. What a terrible person. What's the narrative in 2025? Elon Musk, look at that stupid billionaire. He's trying to steal all our taxpayer money to enrich himself, right? He's trying to steal my Social Security. But what has changed? It's the opposite extreme. And the attention is a million times bigger, but it's literally the same exact shit.
Exactly.
The same exact shit.
And maybe that's why he's so happy, because now he's really pissed off a huge amount of people.
There's no one else. Like, he's literally the entire globe. And this is something I think through too. It's like, now the entire planet is now paying attention. They're paying attention.
You know, this ultimately underlies some of people's really, you know, concern, because they see that it's impacting Tesla sales. So all the, you know, the woke crowd that 5 years ago were the ones leading the charge to buy Teslas, they're no longer there. Now the market has broadened dramatically, and so a lot of people who weren't, you know, the sort of out there buying Teslas because of the environment are now looking at the car from a more favorable point of view. So time will tell whether it's important.
My argument there is, like, you're going to replace one extreme with the other. It may be.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about all the woke people is that they were the rich people and they could spend money on cars, you know?
Yeah, but by definition, they're what, 5% of the world's population, if that?
That's right.
So it's like from, if we're looking at it from a purely business perspective, is it going to hurt some sales? Yeah. Is it going to be material long term? No way.
Yeah, Faza, I said that all very lighthearted.
No, I know that.
I mean, the truth of the matter is I'm very comfortable with where the company is. I think it'll find plenty of buyers and this will be a very, very successful company.
It's just so fun to follow. That's why we can't shut up about it.
It is fun. It is fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Any last thing before we wrap the sucker up? Blair looks content.
No, I hope I'm that guy for different reasons now.
No, you're this guy now.
I'm Blair, this guy.
You're not that guy. You're this guy. And then who knows? Maybe in a few months, it'll be that guy again.
Yeah. So maybe I'm forgiven.
Where can people find you, Larry?
I'm on X. You can't miss me. Tesla Larry. So that's where they find me. And by the way, they can find me at the Maverick Mind on your channel.
Go check out the Maverick Mind playlist. We got a bunch of banger new interviews coming. We're recording two next week, and we have awesome ones coming down the pike with Larry as the host with Maverick Mind on this channel. Larry, this was awesome. So fun.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. Thanks, Hans. Of course.